You're listening to the Known Legacy Podcast, brought to you by Known Legacy Ministries. For more information, go to knownlegacy.org. Now here's your hosts, Bill and Travis.
Cut grass smells amazing.
Yes.
I love it. Like
only second to burning leaves in the fall.
Oh,
I'll be honest with you.
Oh, and that's... You know, ever taken leaves and like crunched them in your hands and smell them like that sweet kind of smell of fall. But because there's some guys mowing right now, and man, it smells amazing. But there's like a hint of gasoline. It's like cut grass / gasoline.
So it's excellent. Hey, thank you guys for checking out Known Legacy. If you stumbled upon us, man, we're so happy you're here checking us out and listening to us. We just have honest conversations with guys from across the nation that we hope will help others wake up, gear up, and come alive in their faith in Jesus Christ. And Bill over there, I'm Travis. Kyle, the producer.
Hello.
And we are so happy you're here. As always, info@knownlegacy.org if you want to share some thoughts, ideas, words of encouragement, or criticisms. Bill is always the best one to get the criticisms. Anyways.
Thanks a lot. That's perfect, man. I appreciate it.
If you're on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, if you can, we'd love a review. And always share it, like it, subscribe to it.
Yes.
And that way you stay up to date. And our biggest goal right now is that every single week we drop a new podcast some Thursday.
Yes.
And so
yes,
that's
we
what
love
we're
it.
Trying to do.
We
so.
Love it. And you guys want to remind you that September 19th through the 21st, we have our next Known Legacy Men's Retreat coming up. You can sign up, go to knownlegacy.org, and you'll see the link for the men's retreat. We are so excited to have you come to that. So sign up today. Space is limited.
So Gen X, I'm a Gen Xer. I'm proud to be a Gen Xer, the last feral kid generation. You know, we drank from hoses, we licked the lead paint, and we rode in the back of the car without seatbelts on. None of us got a biking helmet until we were like in college, if we got one.
Like, why are we have this thing?
Right.
This is ridiculous.
Right. And now you can't see a kid in the neighborhood without a biking helmet on. So anyways, the we have a gentleman who just tore apart a downspout with
somewhere.
The string trimmer. I don't know if you guys can hear it. But anyways, here's my question for us. As the trauma generation, what was your movie growing up that you watched as a kid and it changed you? Like, it could be emotionally just wrecking you. It could be scaring you. But it's one of those movies that you're like, oh, the world is not as innocent and safe as I may have thought it was. My life is forever different because of this movie. So that's my question for you guys. So where are you going to go? What do you got?
Kyle, you want to go first?
Okay, I'll go first.
Yes.
1974, I was 9 years old. My family, we lived in Ohio. We took a trip to the Smoky Mountains.
Okay.
And I don't remember how long the drive is. We get there, and they have all these drinks and everything with my parents. I've had brothers three years younger than me, and they just had passed out. So they said, you know, Kyle, go do whatever. So they put me in front of a TV.
Oh, no.
And this is before cable. And there were like four channels. Well, there was a made-for-TV movie on that, and that was the 3 hours that I went from being a boy to a man.
Oh, goodness.
It was Helter Skelter.
Oh, I've never seen that one.
And it's about Charles Manson.
Yes. Okay.
And I
goodness.
I'm like paralyzed watching this
How
movie.
Old were you?
Nine.
Oh, my goodness.
And at the end of the movie, I was like, I couldn't sleep. I was afraid. You know, it was terrible. It was terrible.
Your parents should have just given you the keys of the car. Like, I'm saying, like, I know. It'd have been safer at this moment.
Walk down the hall. Your dad gives you a old Milwaukee. And
yeah.
It's like, oh, good gracious.
Welcome to the burden of being a man. So,
oh, wow.
How about you, Bill?
So I remember when I was a kid, like, there's the movie called Alive.
Alive.
Oh. It was the rugby football team.
Oh, yeah.
Delicious. Like,
and I remember, like,
it's a true story.
Yeah, it is. I know, and that's what I think it was. That's because we're talking about what's traumatizing. And I remember looking, and like, they're not going to eat. Oh, they are, and like, and they had to eat their friends.
Oh yeah,
and you're like, and something in me changed in that moment. I was like, because I was with my friend, and we went down to watch the movie, and it was actually a snow day.
Yeah,
so it was snowing.
Oh.
And
even
it was
better.
Like, and like the mall was closed. You know, it wasn't like much of the mall was open because it was snow day and everything. But I remember walking home with him, and it was quiet. We're just like, we both were like, I think we just grew up like 10 years.
Well, and at some point you're thinking, I could take him. I could take him and probably, if I had to, I could take him and survive a week or two on him. I mean, that's what you got to go to some point.
Oh, it was terrible. And anyway, so that one kind of really hit me hard, I guess I would say.
So for me, it was, so I had three older sisters. So down the street, my mom took care of a guy who was older. He was a few years older than me, but he became a brother to me. In fact, I get to see him in a few weeks, and I'm really excited about that. And for some reason, we were going to see the movies, and this was – I was in third grade. He was in, like, sixth or seventh grade. He was a junior high kid. And we went to this PG movie that we just thought it was going to be a fun little story. Well, it was the movie Poltergeist. and like
– Who came up with the ratings and at that point?
I just – I don't remember anything, but I remember he had bruises on his arms because – I dug into his arm so hard so many times in that movie because it was absolutely terrifying. Like, yeah. I still can't go back and watch it. I've tried to watch it, you know, for nostalgia's sake, and I can't get there.
No way. I can't do those anyways. Those are like, those ones wreck me, man. I don't sleep good.
Nope.
Okay. I remember when I was a little kid. I'm going to share my burden with you guys really quick. But Sesame Street.
When Wait, I you was were traumatized by Sesame Street?
When I was a little kid. When I was a little kid. I'm going to get on
One,
there.
Two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine,
Never,
ten, 11.
That was amazing.
No!
I mean, that was amazing. And so there was this scene with Ernie, and he was in an Egyptian, like, tomb or something.
Okay, vaguely remember.
And there was an Egyptian version of him, and he popped out around the corner. I'm talking, I was, like, four. Like whatever. And, and I remember that for like the next year.
Yes.
So going up my stairs, like there was like you could go up the stairs, but behind it was like the back room.
Okay.
And it was just a wall right there.
Oh jeez.
And so I was always scared. I was always scared that that guy was going to jump out.
That Egyptian Bill would jump out and meet you.
That literally I would. From the one side of the kitchen over, I would just run up. That's like, oh. I like cut that corner. I was like, whoom, and I would go up. I was as fast as that sound. You know, I would just go up. And it, that's what I did when I hit that corner. Always thinking that little Ernie was going to. Anyways, so that's just my.
Trauma movies, man. That's fantastic. So
anyways, sorry.
Guest.
So yeah, so sorry to share that little insight to my childhood. But anyways, hey, we have a great guest today. His name is Derek Barabee. He is a pastor in Rhode Island, and we are so glad to have you on, man. Sorry about my little tangent there, but I need to share my trauma.
Absolutely, no. I love it. I'll tell you what, it made me think of a movie myself.
Okay, what was your movie?
Yeah. Well, at first I was thinking, I told you guys before, that the movie Signs with Mel Gibson, that freaked me out. And I wasn't even a kid. I was a little bit older. But the more you guys started talking about these older movies, man, it was triggering my mind. I remember the movie Deliverance. Melted my brain. I was like, this can't be actually happening.
This isn't real people. Yeah, exactly.
But again, we go back, 1980s PG, man. They just let it fly. Nothing was regulated.
There was no control.
No, not at all.
We had Coca-Cola in glass bottles.
Yes,
I mean, things were good back then, too.
Oh, yeah.
Crystal Pepsi. I mean, come on.
It was horrible.
They were terrible.
Orbits.
Oh,
yes. Yes.
It's like the precursor to bubble tea or booble tea or whatever it's called today.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh. I mean, no. Horrible.
But at the same time, like, if you had a rope in the back seat, it was good enough as a seatbelt. Like, it was fine. So, wow, man. Yeah, that movie was – yes, I do remember that movie, and you're right. I think I've tried to block that out so far.
Oh, yeah.
That
it just came back. I was like, wait a minute.
I mean, when they're like paddling down the end at the end and they're like, come on, you can make it. Like, just go. Oh, edge of your seat. Man. Well, man, we are so glad to have you on today, man. Thanks for being here. You know, I was telling these guys and for those of you listening, I love Derek's story. Man, it's a story of faithfulness and listening to the heart of God. And so, Derek, share a little bit about yourself, kind of where you're from, all that kind of good stuff. And we'd love to hear from you. So share your story.
Man, I grew up in church. You know, I was a pastor's kid in a sense. So I kind of grew up in church. I grew up in the ministry, you know, in the church, always serving, always doing something, being part of it. And, you know, kind of for the first part, probably being dragged along. And then you kind of, you know, find your way and you kind of get into it. I, you know, a lover of the Lord and following Christ. at a young age and kind of fell into the that whole path of following what it looked like, you know, to be a follower of Jesus. Went to Bible college. Actually, that's where I met Bill. Bill and I have been now friends for over 20 years, which has been amazing. And then, you know, graduated from college with a pastoral major and a youth pastor minor. During that time, was working at the church that I'm actually currently at right now as a volunteer youth pastor. My dad was on staff here as an associate pastor. So, you know, serving and working in college, just being here at the church. I had met my wife. We had gotten married right the same year that we graduated back in 2004. So, you know, again, a little over 20 years ago. And, you know, you graduate from school and I think you have all these intentions of.
Absolutely, Bill. Thank you. Yeah, I grew up in Blackstone, Massachusetts, and have, you know, kind of lived all over between Mass, Rhode Island, and Connecticut through the course of my life. I am married to my beautiful and wonderful wife, Stacy. Been married now 21 years as of last Thursday.
Wow, congratulations.
And, thank you, Bill. Thank you. And I have three amazing kids. I have one oldest daughter is about to be 18 in a couple of months. My middle daughter is 15, and then my youngest son is 13. So, yeah, never a dull moment. Definitely been crazy, but it's a good life. It's a good thing. So, yeah, a little bit of my story. Obviously, Bill, as you know, we went to college together. We were in school together.
Yep.
I grew up as a pastor's kid in a sense. So, you know, my parents got saved when I was 5 years old. So grew up in the church. You know, my parents immediately jumped right into things. So at first, you know, obviously it was like being dragged along. But then you kind of take you to your feet, you know, you kind of find your way. And as a follower of Christ, you know, I kind of jumped in at a young age at 10, 11, 12 years old. I can remember being on a bus ministry with my dad, driving the bus, picking up kids, you know, so I kind of had a heart for people in ministry all the way back at the beginning. You know, ended up in Bible college, obviously, Bill, where you and I met. I met my wife, Stacy, there. That was, you know, graduated from college back in 2004, which is crazy to think that that's over 20 years ago. It's mad to think that.
Yeah.
You're an old man.
Pre-iPhone era. So.
Exactly. Pre-any phone era, really. We had a little flip old school things.
Yeah.
Right? But what
the
a
pager
crazy
generation.
Thing. So in that season, you know, I'd been freshly, you know, newly married, graduated from school. At that time, I was working at the church that I'm actually at now. Just as a volunteer there, they were looking for a youth pastor at the time, or the youth pastor had moved on. I was in as kind of like an interim role, just, you know, volunteering. And it turned out to be a 3-year thing. You know, my wife and I were here for 3 years, about a year while we were still in school and 2 years after we'd gotten married. Mm-hmm. And, you know, coming out of Bible college, you got all these hopes and dreams and it's like, this is what I'm going to do. This is who I am. This is what I'm going to be. I'm going to be a youth pastor. I'm going to be in ministry. I'm going to be full time. And, you know, the bubble pops when it's like, I know I'm talking with at the time, the senior pastor here, the older leadership here, you know, it was like my dad was on staff here and the whole concept was like, oh no, you're never going to be on staff here. You know, you're never going to be in ministry here.
Ooh,
and it was
wow.
like my bubble. And it was like really one of my first kind of ministry hurts, I guess you could call it.
Wow.
Where I was just kind of taken back. Like I'm thinking, you get that feeling, you know, it's like, well, I'm good enough to do this now for free. I've been doing it for 3 years. I can do it like that. But, you know, you have no interest in me kind of thing. And it was a hurt. So I started looking elsewhere. You know, I was at the time I was self-employed. I was kind of working and, you know, beating the street, looking for work and, you know, supporting Stacy and, you know, doing ministry on the side. So I decided to take a job. My father-in-law, I worked at Electric Boat down in Groton, Connecticut. You know, they build submarines.
Okay.
So, super exciting job at the time. I was, like I said, I was self-employed, working with my hands. I was doing tile work, you know, backsplashes, bathtubs, all stuff like, you know, custom stuff.
Yeah.
Always been good with my hands. I did a job for a guy who would ultimately become my boss at Electric Boat. So God definitely had his hand in it. He got me into Electric Boat. It took a while. I moved to Connecticut with Stacy, where Stacy's from. We lived in Connecticut. You know, we were living in our parents' basement for a little while until we could get our feet. Everybody knows that, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then at the time, still found a church in Connecticut, working as a volunteer youth pastor. So doing the church, you know, ministry volunteer thing. And I was all in ministry. That's how I've lived my life. I was always all in. And then working full time. And I rose quickly at Electric Boat. I jumped right in. I would do, you know, I would go to any training they would send me to. And I would, you know, learn, I could learn with the best of them. I could learn and grasp it quick. I was good with my hands. And I turned that there into a 10-year, ultimately would be a 10-year career at Electric Boat while I did ministry at the same time. So at one point I was doing, you know, working full time, and I say full time, but it was beyond that. And then at one point I was doing ministry ultimately full time. And I always believed, you know, it's like, you don't have to be getting a paycheck to be in full time ministry. Like, that's not what it looks like.
Yeah.
You know, for me anyway, at the time. So I knew God was working in that. He had put me in Electric Boat, and there, you know, I was working again at this other church in Connecticut, volunteering, same thing. And I'm not going to get into all details, but more ministry hurts. More ministry hurts, where it was like our rationales didn't connect, and I couldn't understand. I'm like, God, what are you doing to me right now? And I'll tell you what, the hurt that I received there in Connecticut pushed me right into the workforce hard. I said, well, that's fine. I'm going to find another church. I'm just going to attend. I'm going to sit on the back row. I'm not going to do anything.
Yeah,
I'm going to just go to church, and I'm going to work. I'm going to work, you know, and that's kind of where it
was. So, you know, as you're talking through that, because, again, I mean, Travis is in full-time ministry, as I, you know, mm-hmm. we've both been in paid. But, man, go through some of that emotion, because I feel like there's a lot of guys who are like just, okay, we're going to go to college, and then it's just going to work out. And then, boom, I get a church calls, and la-da-da, everything works. What kind of thoughts were going through your mind when it was like rejection after rejection? What were you feeling when all that was going on?
I was hurt, and at that last series I was talking about being at the church in Connecticut, like the conversation I had with this guy, you know, and, you know, obviously no names, the conversation I had with him, I remember standing there feeling like, you know, and I worked in the shipyard at that time, you know, I was a lab tech at Electric Boat. So I did, you know, I used to tell people I was kind of like the Mythbusters. If you guys remember the Mythbusters.
Heck yes, dude. Phenomenal.
My job was all non-destructive testing. So I lit fire. I did compression tests. I did all this stuff, and I loved it. The way that I talked with this pastor and trying to work this, he spoke to me like some of these guys in the shipyard wouldn't even speak to me. And I'm like, how is this, you know, religion? How is this church? How is this Christ-like? And it threw me into this path where I said, I'm going to work, and I'm going to be the best I can be here, and I'm going to support my family. I'm not going to worry about anything else. I'm just going to go to church. And I did. This is where it got crazy, guys. This is where it got crazy. I had, on because of my work ethic and because of the where I was working, they gave me an open checkbook. As in, you work as much as you can work as much as you want to work. And I'll tell you guys, I took that to 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 hours a week. There were 3 years at Electric Boat where I worked well over 100 hours a week there. And I just did my thing. And at that time, I was back into ministry a little bit. You know, I'd gone to another church. They'd asked us to do stuff. We got involved. And I'll tell you right now, what sacrificed was my family.
Yes, that was my question.
I put my family
on
the altar of ministry, ultimately, and work. And I was shredded on both ends hard.
Wow.
And I couldn't find a balance for a real long time. It was crazy. I look back, I don't even know how I did it, to be honest. I was working crazy, crazy, crazy hours. And the thing is, it's nuts. I made it to the top of the ladder. I made it to the very top of the ladder there. I tell people now my ladder was on the wrong building.
Yep.
My ladder was on the wrong building.
So here's my question. Like, often, obviously, God has put a call on your life, and it was there from a very early age. Yep. However, he delayed the fulfillment of that call, probably because there was some pruning. And some transformation that he had to work deep within your heart and within your soul to get you ready for the position you're currently in. As you have a chance to reflect, and again, that does not excuse church hurt, and that doesn't excuse pastors and leaders being jerks at all.
Yeah.
We have a call and a responsibility to do it right, not do it worse than the world. What, looking back and reflecting, what were some of those pruning things that now in hindsight you're like, I get what God was up to. I know it hurt, and I know I was mad at him at the time, but now I understand what he was doing in my heart and in my life to prepare me for where he ultimately wanted me to be, and that's where I am right now.
I think for me, it was tough to see, and it kind of came to a point, I think, of pride. For me, in truth, right? We don't like that P word. Hey, the tail end of my story, like I said, I was there for 10 years, and the way it ended wasn't good. I actually got, like, blackballed at work. And at this time, the last 3 years there, I was in a truly toxic environment. I think God was actually – I know this. He was calling me out for the last 3 years, and I stayed. My story, my buddy Pete, he gave me this kind of analogy. But it's like my story was kind of like the opposite of Jonah. I was swallowed by the whale, and I wanted to stay in the whale.
Ooh, oh, wow.
The whale was the steel submarine. I was in this right. steel whale. Hey, I was in this steel whale, and it's like, hey, golden handcuffs. It was yep. great pay. Ooh. I was making awesome money. God was calling me. He said, and I was doing ministry. I was still doing full-time ministry on the side. At that point, I was at another church in Connecticut. I was a lay pastor at another church, working full-time and working full-time here. And it got crazy. And my wife, Stacy, she prayed for my heart. She saw that I was turning into somebody that I was not. I was becoming this person. I was not kind. I was not gracious. It was not me. It was not me. And I was basically handcuffed to this reality, and God was moving me, and it took him pulling me out of that. I ended up getting blackballed at work, this crazy story with an Xbox. I got accused of having all this information. It was proved to not be true, and they still were going to let me go wow. to make an example of me at the company. And I was like, guys, I have lived with nothing but integrity. And I mean, they looked at me like a badge number, and I was going to fight it. And again, it all comes back to this. I said, I'm going to fight this. I'm going to get back in. I'm going to show them who's right, and then I'm going to quit. And God was like, do you not see me removing you from
wow.
this? And you're going to go back. Hey, and it was all pride. It was pride. I said, I'm going to show them. And I went and I talked, and I ended up choosing to leave. I said, you know what, guys? This is not – I had you know, you have union arbitration. They're like, you're being this, you're being that. We can fight you. You're going to win. I had everybody telling me you can win, and I felt God was saying – that's not the right
time.
I've been trying to get you out. It's time.
It's time.
Man, well, yep. you shared some of the breaking point. What was some of the breaking point in your family that made you go, I need to do this? Like, what were some things that were kind of some big, yeah. big parts, even from Stacy?
Yeah. Well, I can tell you this. You know, my kids, when I first started that journey at Electric Boat, we had just Natalie. She was young. She was a baby. Here I am, new on my feet in this career, opportunity to make money. We had the opportunity to buy a house. So I'm like, all right, Stacy and I talked. Praise God that we were on the same page. It never pushed my marriage to the point of threads. But like,
awesome.
Man, did she sacrifice? But then as my kids getting older, by the time I had left there in 2017, you know, we had Josiah there. But there's a lot of stuff I missed that I'll never get back. And I look back now. I mean, I had the opportunity there. I'd go in for 5 minutes, get paid for 8 hours. And, you know, I was at the top of the chain. And it was like, I look back now and it's like, none of that matters. None of that mattered. I missed a lot of opportunities. And for Stacy, I think, honestly, she prayed for me for years that God would just break me and get a hold of my heart. And he wow. did. And honestly, it's because of her. It's because of her. There were definitely a lot of hurts. But I was so leery of coming the opposite way,
right.
you know, coming back into this world. And ultimately, you know, to get into the story, it's like that led to me becoming that church that I was a lay pastor at. I became the associate pastor there. And from then, have since moved back to my ultimate home church in Rhode Island. And now I'm the executive pastor here at Ocean State Baptist Church in Rhode Island. So
that's awesome.
Pretty crazy, but it's been a journey. I'm still learning.
So let me ask you this question, because I'm wagering to bet your story is not unique to you, and there's probably a lot
yeah.
of guys that are extremely successful in their job, and the money's pretty good, but they are starting to see the toll that it's taking on family,
yeah.
and more importantly, on their own conscience and their own soul. And let's say you were to have coffee with one of these guys, and he's just like, man, I got more money than I know what to do with, but I hate my life and who I've become. What would you say to that man?
Oh, man. First, I'd say I definitely know what that feels like, because the empathy of the reality. I remember those last couple of years of feeling like my soul was ripping, like I was trying to be somebody that I wasn't, and my soul on a daily level was ripping, and I honestly didn't know what to do, you know. And again, I had grown up in church.
Yeah.
I was a follower of Christ. I was in the Word of God, but like for me, it was honestly a sense of pause, and it was a sense of rest. And Ooh. It was that moment. It was that moment in between when I ultimately left EB. I had no job. It was like they pulled my badge number that day. They were like, "This it." I got walked out like I was a criminal.
Yeah.
And then I was gonna fight it and did it. And I went 12 weeks with no work. So I was just volunteering. It's like in that moment, it was almost like I had no choice but to abandon my fears, my wants, my desires. And I praise God for Stacy. Like, you know,
it was the desert.
It was the desert. It was being in that desert and,
yep.
and having nothing yep. but the voice of God and yep. leaning on him saying, I have nothing. Because I had always controlled everything. I could make the money. I could do this. I had yep. it all. I had climbed that ladder and it was literally, quite literally, all taken away from me. And I had no choice but to trust God. And that for me, that was the moment where it was like it changed everything. I look back at now, that's one of my memorials. You talk about coming out of the river and building the stones.
Yes.
That's one of my memorials where I look back at the God in that one of those 12 weeks I didn't work. God took care of me. It was like Elijah. He took care of me by the river. And here I was fighting to stay in the whale, you know? And it's like, it was so crazy.
Dude, that's why I love the Old Testament, man. There's so many great, honest human endeavors yeah, yeah. and human experiences that you can pull from and blend together. Yeah. And like, yeah, I've been there. I know what that is. Absolutely.
So being on the other side now, and when I mean that, like, yeah. man, you're now back in the church full time. Man, what is the difference in life and family? And I'm not saying everyone go and run to ministry, but I'm saying, what is yeah. the difference now that you've made the main things? Like, how different is it for you?
Oh, I think I'm still learning because of my history and growing up in church. I think, you know, we collectively as a church have not done a great job of creating a culture where people can be open and honest and not share this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I'm coming from a church that has history of trauma and trouble and all kinds of garbage because we play this game where everything just gets swept under the rug and nobody's hurting and I'm fine and we're all good and everything's okay. Don't show any weakness, you know? And it's like, we for me, I'm still walking this path of healing. And, you know, myself, Pastor Mike Woodward, who's a senior yep. pastor here, we're trying, in a sense, to change the culture of just even our church, person by person, you know, starting with us, starting with the staff of what yeah. that looks like to live vulnerably, to be real, to be authentic, and to truly be practicers of the way, you know,
yes.
to be followers yeah. of Christ and what it looks like. And it's been a journey that I'm actively still in. Like, we definitely yeah. don't have it figured out. You know, it's like,
yeah,
you're in it.
You know, there's this pull away from church. I mean, okay, so I'm encouraged by yeah. Gen Z, Gen Y, like they are out, whatever, the Gen Z, Gen Alpha, I guess, whatever they're called. I don't know all the gens.
We hit
but anyways,
the end of the alphabet a little too soon, I think.
Exactly, we did. Now we're like A2. Yeah. I don't know where we're back. But I'm saying, like, there is a pullback to church, but they're not there for the show.
Right.
They're not there
they
for
don't the, care
show.
About the show.
And I love your heart. So what would you say to an aging pastor who's like, we're trying to connect with people, but I think you already hit it on the head, but what would you say to them about what is most valuable now and the church needs most when it comes to the current state of the church in America? What would you say, if you had all these pastors in front of you, what would you encourage them with right now?
Honestly, I think authenticity, you know, and being vulnerable in a healthy way. You know, a lot of times our false self can be, you know, almost overly authentic and overly vulnerable, and we kind of create the opposite problem where, you know, we go full victim, and that's not what
Ooh,
I'm talking about.
Golly,
but to
yeah,
be true, hey, to be real and to show our struggles and to walk alongside people and to create a space that's safe for people to share that stuff and
yeah.
be like, hey, God is working in my life, but I'm struggling right now. I'm having a hard time reading his word. I'm having a hard time praying. I don't even know if I'm praying. It's like, it's being able to be vulnerable and you know, people don't feel like they can be that way in church. And
yeah.
Jesus himself said the church should be a place for those who are sick, not those who are healthy.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think it's recreating that culture and it is tough. You know, speaking to pastors out there, I get it. It's hard. Days are hard, you know, but we're, you know, the Bible calls the work that we're doing a good work. And it's like, we got to remember, like, you know, what we're doing at the end of the day, it's like, Christ is right alongside there with us, and he's holding us up, you know?
Yeah, no, I love it.
So I think in an effort to try to be more than we are, we create so much stuff in our lives, it just weighs us down, you know?
It's like
we don't need to be any more than we are. We're called to be what he created us to be, so...
Well, and what I love,
accepting that is the hardest part.
Oh, it is. Yeah. But thank God we have like the full counsel of Scripture to tell us that, because they didn't hide David and his falling and how he struggled with relationships that were forever broken with his older son Absalom and everything else. And then you have Paul, who's like he's like, man, you know my life, and I'm not celebrating it. I'm not a victim of it. I'm responsible for the things that I did. But all of it's garbage compared to the great things that God has done and is continuing to do in my life. And I think you're exactly right. You don't want to ever present yourself as a victim, but you want to present a God who is redemptive and can take all of that brokenness and all of that muck and all of that crap and do something miraculous with it for his glory and for his name. And I think it's fantastic, man. Your story's fantastic. Thanks, brother.
No, I love having you on, man. Any final thoughts before we jump into the Fast Five? Anything you'd like to share, kind of finish up with?
I don't know. I think if anybody finds themselves in that state, it's almost a state of deconstruction in a sense. You're looking at what's around you and thinking, is God in this? Does church have any value? Is there any value in community? To ask the questions. It's like God wants us to approach it, even in our hurts, our doubts, you know, like to be in that place still. Is a place of healing and growth. It's not anything to be ashamed of. It's not anything to be scared of, in a sense. Even though it is scary, it's like God is there walking with us. And the more of us that can be there to walk alongside those people, to pull our boat alongside their boat, not to rescue them from their boat, but to just be with them. It's like that's what we're talking about. That's what we need. So the more of us that can be in that, it's like we create a kind of a healing culture, in a sense. We can redeem it, you know?
Absolutely. I don't think it's too late for the American church to
turn
around.
No.
And I love, and there's, if enough guys like you are in the church, so if you're in the Rhode Island area, and it's a really big state, so you could probably not drive there in a day.
It's the Metroplex of Dallas.
But man, make your way to this church where Derek is. We'll put the link in the bio. But man, I mean, I love this, because there are more pastors that we're talking to, like, man, we just need to be real. And I think sometimes you're right. They don't know what that looks like other than being the victim. And so saying, man, I'm just going to be authentic and say, I'm feeling this today. It's everywhere. Like you said, it's everywhere through Scripture. But now it's at a point where we're going, man, let's just be honest with where we are. Invite that in and say, man, God can do something great with the mess that we have.
Correct.
So, man, love it. Love what you got to share. And so, dude, as we finish up, we have our Fast Five. I'd love to hear your Fast Five. So, number one, who do you most admire and why?
Oh, I would say probably at this point in my life, one of my big admirations is Pastor Mike Woodward. And Bill, I know you know Mike.
Absolutely.
Being under him here, he's the senior pastor here, being under him here, not only the culture he's created, but helping me in my own walk. You know, I feel like I haven't, and not to say that we are perfect here, but I don't feel like I've personally been in a healthy church environment prior to being on staff here now, which I've been for just about 5 years. So he's helped me kind of deconstruct my own story and walk through it and help with the healing of that. It's been, for me, you know, he's modeled it well, and he's been through his own level of stuff, you know? So he's modeled it well. He's helping the staff, you know, work through their stuff, model it. And it's like, we're trying to create, again, a healthy church community that you know is open and welcoming for people to feel safe to share, you know, their story. So
that's awesome.
Pastor Mike at this point.
Mike's the guy. Like, yeah, we got to get him on the podcast too.
That'd be great.
He's got a solid story. He's a great musician too. And Gabriel Fell. Shout out to Anne Gabriel Fell. It's an amazing band. So anyways, hey, number two, where would you like to go on a vacation with your family?
Oof, I'll tell you what. Ireland. Stacy and I would love to get to Ireland specifically within the next couple of years. That's been on our bucket list for a little while.
You want to kiss the Blarney Stone?
Oh, we're going to walk the island and just check it out. We want to get out there. So that's a bucket list trip that we're planning to get out to Ireland. So,
I love it. Absolutely. I love it. That's a beautiful place. Ireland.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Love it.
Hey, okay, number three. What are you currently reading, whether Bible or a book?
So in God's word, I generally, for the most part, daily stay in the New Testament. I'll stay in the Gospels a lot of time. Right now, I'm currently reading Luke. I read Luke 6 this morning. You know, a little bit of the Beatitudes in there. You get a little Jesus talking about loving enemies.
Yep.
Book-wise, I just finished John Mark Comer's Practicing the Way.
Oh,
very,
good
very
book.
Good. Very good book. Good book about apprenticing Jesus and what it looks like. So, you know, again, part of this same journey of walking that path and what it looks like to be an apprentice of the master, you know? So that's an excellent one. I'm working through. I currently always go back to the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership.
John Maxwell. Yeah.
With people. Simple concepts, solid truth. So, like, for leadership stuff, awesome. But yeah, a couple different things like that. Those are great.
Nice, man. Okay, number four. What is a goal you have for this year?
Yes. All right. I don't know if I would call it a goal, but I would call it a path.
Okay.
I am currently on the path to get healthier. So this is straight up physical, spiritual, mental, all of it.
Okay.
But physically, I'm on a path of I've been taking some time to find that time of Sabbath and rest, having some time for myself in the morning, not only to do my reading, but to actually get to the gym and to work out a little bit and lose some weight, just kind of getting more active. So, you know, I find for myself personally, I connect with God even through that.
Yeah.
So finding that time for me and getting to even work out, exercise a little, when my body's healthy, my mind is healthy, and spiritually I find I can be more healthy to others, you know.
Yep.
So it's like it's kind of getting into that path, and it's a journey. I'm walking it. So I don't necessarily have a goal at the end of it, but just to continue to walk down this path of physical, spiritual, and mental health, you know. So
love
that's kind of where I'm on.
I love it, man. I love it.
Yeah.
And what is the most impactful piece of advice you've ever been given?
Oh, man. That's tough because I feel like I've been given a lot of different advice. Some of it, it's probably I'd have to censor because I learned in the shipyard. But I will tell you one that's been kind of I've been grabbing onto lately. All right? I've been grabbing onto lately. Do what you can, not what you can't. Something okay. Mike said. Master
yeah.
Mike said, do what you can, not what you can't. Meaning – we get so focused on trying to work and do all these things that we're not good at, we're not gifted at, and we burn ourselves out. Hey, in all these areas, when God says, do the things that I've gifted you in, you know, focus on those strengths. You know, that's something that Mike's been sharing and you know, modeling to the staff. And I'll tell you what, that alone will change your culture. When you allow people to, you know, step on the gas and the things that they're good in, instead of struggle and fight through all the things that they're not good at, but we've got to just do, it doesn't work. And we find ourselves in a state of burnout. So, doing the things that
that's
you can
good.
Do the things you can, not the things you can't. So,
yeah, control what you can control. That's great,
man.
Dude, this has been really good. Thank you so much for being on today, man. Thanks for sharing your heart. I'm glad we finally had a chance to get you on. I've wanted to get you on for a while.
Great stuff.
And just share this journey. Because there's a lot of guys that are in that boat that are like, man, I just want to, like you said, I want to just break out and do something different. So, Derek, you've been a blessing to have on. I know that we will put down the website on the link, and we are so glad to have you on, guys. Thanks for listening today.
Absolutely. Thanks for waking up, gearing up, and being willing to come alive in Christ.
Come alive to who
That's
we are.
Story,
you guys
Derek.
Have an awesome week, and we will talk to you soon.
God bless.
You too.
Thanks for listening to the Known Legacy Podcast. We'd love to hear from you. So email us your questions or comments to info@knownlegacy.org.